Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives Wisconsin chapter. Our goal is for listeners to find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends, and just as comfortable as you hear our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. If you've listened to our podcast before, you know the drill. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Information Officer at a human services company called MyPath. Our observers are Brian Mahulski, Health System Specialist at Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee. Brian, can you say hello?
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here again, Brian. And Madeline Bushman, who is an operations manager in the Mayo Clinic Health System Department of Family Medicine. This is Madeline's first podcast with us, and Brian and I are thrilled to have her join our podcast team. Can you say hello, Madeline?
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
So our topic today is one that's been with us for a long time, and one that is especially weighing on our minds now, community health. Joining us today as our guest is Jerome Garrett, Department Administrator for Family Medicine and Community Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Brian, Madeline, and I are looking forward to hearing what insights Jerome has on this vital topic. Welcome, Jerome.
Thank you for having me.
So wanted to get started, Jerome, by maybe having you give us a bit of a career flyover so that we can understand how your focus on community health evolved.
Absolutely. So I've been in healthcare for over 20 years. Started off at Aurora as an intern, and interned in the various capacities from being a CNA to rooming patients in the various academic clinics to working in the administrative area. After that, I worked in process improvement for several years before going back to graduate school. Then went to graduate school at the University of Colorado, Denver. Did a postgraduate fellowship with Mayo Clinic Health System in Eau Claire. And after that fellowship, I landed a role as the Director of Operations for Primary Care. And that's where I think I began to really learn about different things around systems of health and population health management. And really becoming more curious as I reflected on my experiences as an intern and working in systems improvement to really say, ask the question about, you know, how does different systems work, and really challenging just the conventional wisdom that we've had in healthcare for so long. Because once you start to get into looking at value-based care and population health management, it kind of turns our system upside down, because instead of, earning a living or making money on, taking care of sick patients, it's like, okay, how do we prevent folks from, ending up in our ERs or ending up in the hospital? Or how do we also engage folks to and patients to keep them well and healthy? And so I would say that's a little bit of where my journey began. But as I progressed in my career, I held a number of roles, a lot of, around directly or indirectly in primary care. And so after my time in Eau Claire, I had the opportunity to work at the Medical College of Wisconsin and as a division administrator in general internal medicine and geriatrics, and then also held a number of leadership roles with Ascension as well as ProHealth before becoming the administrator in my current role here in the Department of Family Medicine, where in this position, I actually have the opportunity to work with leaders in our department as well as throughout our school in community health. And I would say, in this position, I'm able to actually put more focus and energy on the topic and the work at hand.
That was a great flyover, Jerome. Thank you for that. Really tease up understanding how someone's careers and interests can evolve to support our communities, but also gives us some context for the insights I think you're about to share. So we had the pleasure of having some conversation with Jerome before today's podcast. And in those conversations, he mentioned to us that he thinks it's important for health systems to do small things to help their communities. So Jerome, can you give us some examples of what those small things might be?
Absolutely. And just one thing I do want to give a full disclaimer. I would say I'm on this journey, just like everyone else. I'm, fairly new to this true space of community health, even though it's been something that's been on my mind for several years, but never really been able to put a name or a title to it. And so again, I just want to just let everybody know, you know, it's just somewhere to start and somewhere to begin. It's something to think about. And so some of the ideas I have are hopefully simple enough where we can just say, hey, let's figure out, just even though we don't know where to begin, we could just start somewhere. And that's what I would just encourage. And one of those small things or ways that you can start is actually just looking at how you're structured as far as operationally set up to when you launch a new program or initiative. When I think about the community, and again, I have had the opportunity to work in both in urban and rural settings. And one of the things that I've observed is, we have structures in place where we can get advice from patients and families and through these, patient and advisory councils. But again, those committees are advisory in nature. And so, I would really question us, are there opportunities to engage community members in multiple settings from various backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, to be at the table when we're actually making key critical decisions on service offerings? And so if we're, doing something within a system of care, we're looking at a new clinic site or looking at a new operation or service, actually having those folks at the table at the beginning may help inform us on how to create services or provide care for various populations at different levels. And so that's one small thing that I think that, organizations can do to really be mindful of the patients they serve from an array of backgrounds, no matter where they're at, urban, rural settings, no matter their cultural background and things of that nature. The other thing I think we want to be mindful of, and I've seen this throughout our state, is to continue those efforts to recruit leaders from various backgrounds and in different backgrounds, and really look around your leadership team and ask the question, are we really, do we have leaders and personnel that really reflect the communities that we serve, and ensure that we really are intentional about those efforts to engage the thoughts and ideals that reflect the stakeholders and the communities that we provide our service offerings to. And so those are just two small things that I think that we just want to continue to be mindful of as we think about engaging the community and really working to partner with various members throughout.
So, Jerome, you called those small things, but frankly, achieving even those steps are pretty big things, right? And those would be an impactful foundation. So once those small things that aren't quite so small are in place, what do you see as the next step for a health system to develop community health strategies?
I think the next step, again, I think, now I want to say, I would say some of these things I think are already occurring. So I think what I think about strategies to continue to build on and engage the various communities is continue to think about the not just the community leaders, but also just community members that may perceive or may not have that voice at the table. And so really engaging our patients, understanding who they are, really going through our data of really identifying individuals throughout the community to make sure that they are at the table when it comes to key decisions that may impact their service offerings. And so ensuring that they are involved and engaged and continuing to meet with those individuals. And again, I think we should also be mindful of just investment in various health equity strategies to ensure that we have access for all care in again multiple settings. When I think about some of the experiences I had in Eau Claire and some of the rural settings, and making sure that we think about leveraging technology and service offerings in some of the more remote and rural settings, all the way to in the urban settings. Making sure that we are mindful of the types of services, the time of day, what we're doing as far as the offerings. But again, engaging those patients that come through our doors to really say, okay, how can we best serve you to provide the care that you need to again, help you be healthy and well? And again, those are just some of the things that are top of mind that I think that we can really do to move forward in engaging the community.
Hey, Jerome, how do you... bringing all those people to the table, pretend you're from a major city or you're rural and you go to the opposite and you don't know the community as well, and they don't have an advisory council currently where you just took a position as a leader, are there any specific like community organizations that you would target to identify those people? Do you ask the employees who should I communicate with in the community? Do you, just any advice on how to get somebody started, like you said?
Absolutely. So again, I don't think there's a right or wrong way, but the thing is like I said, start. And so yes, the simple thing would be to engage your employees from various levels in different sectors. I mean, I think we have, you know, within our workforces, a very diverse group of people that work with, right, with that are employed with us, that make various salary levels and have various skills and backgrounds and things. And I think you could even just start there saying, hey, when you think about your network, that of folks outside of work, you know, who are some of the people that you go to that that would be helpful for X, Y, and Z? And then, you know, even if you are engaging with community leaders, ask those leaders of the constituents that they may represent or people that they may serve as far as community organizations, such as churches or nonprofits, you know, who are, you know, engaged in some of their employees or some of the folks that the stakeholders that of people that they serve. And so, again, I think sometimes when we're working, we get caught up in the construct of making sure that, you know, we have the stakeholders, you know, at the table from other departments and other areas and making sure those leaders are represented. But we have to take that same mindset and that thought process and apply that to how do we be mindful of others that may not be, you know, we engage with on a day-to-day basis that are our colleagues or peers, but maybe are folks that are outside our walls and be more outward focused in our approach so that, again, we're soliciting multiple voices. But again, it kind of ties back together of really making sure that you have just a diverse group of people around the table that are able to think differently than you or whoever the group and team that's working on a particular initiative. But really have those conversations. And again, think about, engaging employees and staff that, again, may historically not have had opportunity to have input in certain decisions in the past. Not to say that everybody has to be at the table, but again, have a process that really allows for an equitable process to engage people from, again, various backgrounds to begin just thinking about what are the needs of the community you serve. And again, I don't want to be too specific because it's not going to be a one size fits all approach. And you got to really look at the city or county or area that you're looking at and really, you know, have, again, I think a lot of it is about conversations.
I like that answer in that you're engaging the workforce and then you're getting into the community as well. It's, I don't want to say killing two birds with one stone but that's kind of, as a leader, you're always trying to engage the workforce, get their feedback, and then in turn through that, you're listening to them and utilizing what their opinion on who to address in the community. So I think that's great. Thank you.
Jerome, thank you so much for those insights. I did want to, in listening to your responses, I wanted to dive a little bit deeper with the advice piece for new leaders within a community that are perhaps taking over a rural clinic and need to build those relationships with those key community members in order to establish trust. What have you seen works well, and what advice would you give to get started to create presence within the community? I know that can take a lot of time to build those relationships, and what might you do to help expedite that?
I'll be honest with you, Madeline. I don't think you can expedite relationship building. You have to be patient and really appreciate the long haul and really understand that it takes time to earn trust and, quite frankly, respect in a new community. For me, I am new to the Madison area. I've been here only about 3 months now. But what I've done is try to attend various events. This week, I am attending the YWCA Summit on Racial Justice, just to get out and meet people and network, is an example. I am currently, asking my leaders that I work with, you know, who are some of the key community stakeholders and members that they recommend that I meet with and start building relationships and rapport with. And it's not just the one meeting, it's continuous meeting. And so, I have meetings on my calendar, every 6 months with certain leaders that I could continue to build that rapport and gain insight on. And so for me, it's something that is definitely something that is not something you could just do quickly. It's something that's going to take time. It's going to take patience and really an engagement. And that's something I'm in the middle of right now as I, learn about the community of Madison and Dane County. And meet different stakeholders and individuals that, again, from various backgrounds throughout the community to say, okay, how can we partner together to improve health? Because that's the thing that our department is really focused on over the coming years is improving health of people, no matter your background, no matter where you come from, that all have access to care and then also have access to truly living healthy lives. And so, again, it takes time and patience.
I like that response. Thank you. It reminds me of the concept of going slow to go fast.
Absolutely.
Right.
Let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible. And for that, we truly appreciate them. Our premier sponsors are Epstein Ewan Architects, HGA, and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Hall Render, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady. So you've alluded a couple of times, Jerome, to what might be some of the barriers to health. So wanted to just talk a little bit about, from your perspective, do you have some line of sight to what we should think of as being the most dramatic health inequities across our communities that as health systems we need to seek to address?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I'm fairly new to the actual specific space of community health. And so I'm still learning a lot and I'm still absorbing all the data and information. One thing I do know is that, the care that, many systems provide is just 20% of what really determines health. I mean, 50% is just, socioeconomic factors, economic factors, and just where you live. 30% of health is also health behaviors. And so I think, when you think about the barriers to health, we got to really look at the total picture of, what are the things that are driving health for a particular individual, which, again, quite frankly, are outside of control of many systems. But again, the question is, what are the offerings that we can do to influence health within that maybe 20% or 30% of care and access that we could provide for our patients? And so, again, some of the disparities that I've seen in the short time that I've really focused on community health, one metric that comes to mind is child well-being, for example, across racial demographics. And so for the state of Wisconsin, for example, there's an index that one of my leaders presented to me that showed that, for white non-Hispanic children, Wisconsin ranks 10th, for example. But then for African-American or Black children, we actually rank last particular metric, which is a huge disparity. And so when you dig into the data, and one of the metrics is relates to a healthcare metric, normal birth weight, again, that same between those two demographics, white, non-Hispanic, babies rate 11, state of Wisconsin ranks 11th, whereas for, Black, it's 33%. And so then the question is, are we digging into the why? Why is that? Understanding the data so that we can say, okay, are there systems or structures or things that we can do to provide better offerings or retool what we've done to be able to say, hey, how can we close this gap so that for the state of Wisconsin, no matter what your background is, we have a consistent system of care and we have rankings that are consistent across all demographics. One of the terms that I recently learned about within our community health team is that there's a term that they use called targeted universalism. And really saying, okay, how can we focus on systems or structures that focus on the most disadvantaged, the most marginalized group, and then that everybody benefits from them. And the example that they use is that, there was a, when we think about the sidewalk and creating you know, adjusting the corners so that, you know, it's wheelchair accessible. Well, it's not, you know, making that change just doesn't just create the accessibility for those that are in wheelchairs. It also helps for the mom that's with a stroller, or for the kid that's on the bike, or the person that may be on crutches, that, or even if you're just jogging and you don't have to, you know, go up a step. I mean, it helps everybody out when you focus on that most vulnerable group. And so as we think about the you know, knocking down those barriers to help eliminate some of those disparities, we have to probably think about and be mindful of, okay, what are those things, or who are the groups that we can target that, you know, would, you know, if we optimize that service for, would benefit all. And again, I think part of that goes back to what I was discussing before, making sure that we have those community voices at the table, because sometimes we don't even know what the questions to ask because we're not getting the perspectives of different stakeholders and groups to be able to really ask the question to really research the issue. And so then what we see, you know, typically are just the results of not having some of those voices at the table.
Jerome, as you're continuing your journey on this work, what mindset do you think a leader must have?
Because one of the things that I would say is, you know, the work can seem overwhelming, quite frankly. There's a lot of data out there. There's a host of health disparities in all settings throughout the state of Wisconsin, you know, in the rural and urban settings. When we think about, you know, what may need to happen to create the infrastructures or adjust the systems to really help us move things forward. And so what I always share with folks is don't try to focus on, you know, the end point and saying we got to accomplish and solve every single problem. I would say our goal is in our current seasons of our careers and this and where we're at is we're making a generational dent to make improvement, and we're on a marathon, and this is a journey, and we're this is a marathon in which we're passing the baton. And so our goal is to just do what we can in our current careers in the time that we have, and as we develop the future leaders that come behind us, that we're passing the baton. And they're building on the work that we're doing. Because again, I think a lot of the constructs, some of the challenges that we have did not happen overnight, but it's not going to, you know, be changed overnight. And so it's going to take time. It's going to take sweat. It's going to take, you know, tears sometimes. But it's going to really be one of those things where we just have to really collaborate, work together, build relationships, build trust, and really be mindful. And know that, again, you know, when you know, years from now, when it's time to retire, we've done all we could do. And our goal is now to say, okay, you know, leader, you know, that's up next, here you go. Hopefully I did a good job of making it easy for you. And I ask that you pay it forward and you know, make it easier for the next person so that we could continue the work ahead. And so, again, it's something that does require, what I'm learning, a lot of patience, because again, you know, when I look at the data, when I've learned and you read all the articles, it's like, whoa, this so much, but our job is not to fix it all. Our job is just try to influence and make a small dent, so that we can make some improvement.
That's great. I feel like a lot of our podcasts have over the last year have come back to team mentality, baby steps, let's make a dent and improve gradually. But, thank you for that.
Jerome, it's time to wrap up our coffee time with you. And on behalf of Madeline and Brian, I'd like to thank you very much for getting the conversation started on this topic of community health. And to one of the points you made, this is just the start of a conversation that we need to begin on behalf of current patients and future generations. So I just wanted to recap a few of the key themes that I jotted down as you were sharing your insights. Speaking of starting, you said we have to start somewhere. And so I took away from your insight that starting somewhere means we have to make sure that we all start with the assumption that just because we're in the community doesn't mean we know the community. So this is not a spectator sport. As leaders in this effort, we have to be intentional about reaching out to our staff to know more about community connections they might recommend. And then we have to actually reach out to the community. It's not something we can be passive about. And so one of the two small things that you talked about was really making an effort to, as you learn those community connections, give those connections seats at the table to inform our decision-making. And then also the continuing need to make sure that we are asking ourselves always, is our leadership of our organization reflecting the community that we serve, so that we more organically get those insights from our community within our organizations. I also loved your statement about learning the phrase targeted universalism, because I think a lot of the podcasts we've done over the past year, actually some of the strategies we've had to put in place during the pandemic lend themselves to targeted universalism as well. For instance, some of our lessons learned related to telehealth can also now translate into improving community health. And so, again, we need to be intentional about that. And then finally, going back to your comment about this is a marathon and not a sprint, one of the takeaways I have from this podcast is just how much of an obligation we as leaders have to model the open-mindedness to community health needs to our organizations now and to our future leaders. To our Coffee with the College listeners, thank you again for taking some time out of your day to join us for this conversation. We enjoy learning so that we can bring these podcasts to you. And then finally, wanted to mention that we're already planning our next podcast. We're going to begin to turn our attention with a podcast or two focused on mental health issues that may be facing our colleagues and our frontline personnel. And we hope you'll join us to learn more.